Good morning, members. Good morning, officials from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation in the Presidency. I also want to greet officials from National Treasury and the officials from the Parliamentary Budget Office. I'd like to greet as well our support staff and our researchers, all of you. I see we have very important visitors this morning. I'm told these are university students from UWC. You are very welcome to this meeting of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Having welcomed all of you, let me just indicate that we do have apologies. First, the chairperson of the committee, Honorable Paul Mashati, is unwell and he has held up his apology. Honorable Malana has a bereavement in the family. Honorable Mazaupa as well has apologized. Honorable Hopestone has been asked to represent this committee in the women's round table that is taking place here in Parliament. Honorable Law has also tendered their apology from the FF, and Honorable Kwango from the UDM has apologized. Honorable Homo from the IFP as well has apologized. They're not available. I just do want to put it on record that we don't have a quorum, but we have agreed, members that are here have agreed that we must continue with the meeting because we are not going to be making decisions. As a result, we will not take the second part of our program, the adoption of the meetings. So we will take the issues. There are two issues on that we want to deal with. In terms of the brief that was sent to the department, the first part deals with the progress report on reporting outcomes, with special focus to the department that we've identified: health, water and sanitation, rural development and land reform, basic education, telecommunication and postal services, small business development, human settlement, national treasury, the South African Body Services, and justice and constitutional development. We have also requested the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation to give us a brief on their own overall expenditure for the first quarter. Hopefully they will be able to give us a brief. That's the second part of the meeting. We haven't seen the documentation yet, but we can talk about that in the course of the meeting, insofar as that area of it is concerned. So let's start off with the presentation of the department on the first area that we asked them to report on in terms of this that was sent to you. Thank you very much. Before you, maybe we must introduce ourselves, all of us here. Because we don't meet so often, we don't know each other. Let me just start off with the members of Parliament. Honorable Nyalogo, start.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Minister. I'm from Mpumalanga. I'm representing this committee. I'm a member of appropriation. Thank you.
Honorable Speaker.
Morning. My name is Mal Kufik. I'm a member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
Morning, everybody. Alan McLaughlin. I'm also a member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations.
And I'm Dr. Baza, member of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. Yes, let's go on to the officials. Including National Treasury and Parliamentary Budget Office. You will introduce yourselves.
Good morning, my name is Satan Gomane. I'm the acting DDD for Outcomes Monitoring and Evaluation in DPME. I'm also the facilitator for rural development. Okay.
Good morning, my name is Peter Petoris. I'm the Chief Financial Officer of DPME.
My name is Caroline Mangwan from DPME.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honourable Members. My name is Gary Wilson. I'm from the Public Finance Division in National Treasury.
Honourable Chair, my name is Tim Bigelow-Pike, Government Alliance on National Treasury.
Carmen Christian, lecturer at UWC in Economics Department.
Mar Maida, visiting professor at the University of the Western Cape from Spain.
My name is Derek Yu, lecturer from UWC Economics Department.
My name is Charlie, student at UWC.
My name is Vanessa Kosamjuma, also in Local Economic Development at UWC.
I'm a student at UWC.
Yeah, I'm
on
the street at UWC.
Leo Zangubane, I'm a student at UWC. Morning, I'm Lydia Wanda, I'm from the Polish Office.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Pierre Lanitramo. I'm the director for the Application Committee.
Good morning, Mel. And everyone. My name is Musa Zanisa, here with the Student Committee.
Morning, I'm Mr. Abrams from Parliamentary Monitoring, Parliamentary Monitoring Group.
Morning, my name is Natasha Mangai, Secretary to the League of Appropriations.
My name is Mephi Chone. I'm an honor student at UDP.
Morning, everyone. My name is Sita Majibi. I'm an honor student at UWC.
Morning, everyone. My name is Vigel and I'm an honor student at UWC.
Morning. My name is Anke Njimla. I'm also a student at UWC.
My name is Lata Hanamdali and I'm also a student at the University of Western Cape.
My name is Swaz Nilsomi. I'm an honor economic student at UWC.
Thank you very much. Now we can hear what the department has to say to us, having known each other. And after the meeting, yeah, we will exchange some personal greetings as well. Okay.
Good morning once more, and thank you to the chairperson of the day, Uba Mundab. And morning to all members of the Standing Committee on Appropriation. We're also very pleased to note that present in the meeting are colleagues from National Treasury that put augment or comment on our presentation. My name again is Zakani Ngomane. With me is the Chief Financial Officer from the DPME. The approach to our presentation is to deal with the first part in terms of the ranking member of the committee on the progress in implementing our programs on the medium-term strategy framework, focusing on the outcomes that cover the department as listed. Those outcomes that deal with basic education, with health, that is outcome 2, with human settlement, outcome 8, the crime situation in South Africa, that is outcome 11, and water and sanitation, under outcome 10, will limit the discussion to issues around the bulk water infrastructure facilities, and start primarily by looking at the economic situation that impacts a little bit on the national treasury contribution. The concluding part of the presentation will give an overall expenditure of our programs. We have included towards the end about 2 slides that the CFO will speak to. So we open to the suggestion by the chair to maybe deal with that part as the second part of the work. If that is acceptable, we should proceed with the presentation. Like I indicated, the focus is on the monitoring and evaluation of the medium-term strategic framework, government strategy implementation plan of the National Development Plan, and that MTSF, as you well know, happens the first 5 years in government. We just concluded the first year of the first 5 years. The presentation is informed by the Radical Socio-Economic Transformation Agenda. It is organized according to the following themes, guided by the income that inputs into those themes: growing the economy, strengthening society, and building a service-oriented public service. Using the performance rating system, the presentation highlights progress in key targets. It highlights key challenges and what is being done to address the challenges. We also make reference to the 9-point plan that the President is committed to in SONA this year to indicate where that the linkages between the program of action of government on the outcomes and the 9-point plan. So to give an overview, particularly for our August visiting students from and the lecturers and professors from the University of Western Cape, just to give you a quick overview of the MTSF. The MTSF is guided by 14 outcomes, and those outcomes inform a government's program of action. Abbreviated that is POA, and is completely aligned with the National Development Plan. Those 14 outcomes are listed on that presentation. The number actually speaks to the outcome. So when we say outcome 1, people that are familiar with the system already know it's basic education. As an example, the Department for Focus for today's discussion is on outcome 1, education, outcome 2, health, outcome 3, safety of all people in South Africa, which includes all your Department of Police, Justice, and all that. Outcome on education, we've covered that in 1, but we also have 5 that look at these within the higher ed institutions. Outcome 7 deals with rural development issue, which is another area of focus for the committee today, and outcome 8 on human settlement, and so on and so on it goes. Just to note that when we started in the fourth administration, the focus was on 12 outcomes. In the fifth administration, 2 outcomes were added. That is one, outcome 13 on social protection, and outcome 14, nation building. Please forgive my voice, it's a bit hot, I have a terrible cold. I hope it's okay. It's clear? What the NTSF does is to address the triple challenges of unemployment, inequality and poverty as envisioned in the National Development Plan. It draws progress reports from the Program of Action, which reports are presented by the ministers coordinating those outcomes for the cabinet committees and subsequently the cabinet. So the reports flowing from the DOA and the MTSF actually become public documents, and they are accessible to members of the public through our website. The report does not cover every target in the MTSF. For each outcome, the report covers a selection of targets, strategic issues that require a change, and provide some pointers to critical future focal areas. It does help government overall to focus on a limited number of key indicators, because then we're better able to use evidence to inform our planning processes, but also to note areas of progress against the NDP. It also helps us to focus on impact, what is the impact on society. There's currently a process seeking to refine some of the indicators on the Millennium Strategic Framework. When we concluded the fourth administration, we realized that for some of the outcomes, the targets were either serious under targeting, in some cases over ambitious targets that were not linked to available resources. So the refinement process seeks to address that. But secondly, it also ensures that we incorporate within the program of action, within the outcome, new mandates. Example, the pronouncements from FONA, the State of the Nation address on the 9-point plan has to be incorporated within the government's program of action. So the MTSF allows that. Maybe I'll just pass that slide to summarize what I've just said. This slide it gives just an overview in a nutshell of how this process is connected. If you look at the NDP and the key planning framework or guiding document for government, it's directly linked to the MTSF in brown. So what we do in DPME in terms of ensuring that linkage and ensuring that government works, we have systems and tools and programs in place that ensure there is that connectivity of the implementation plan, implementation programs to the National Development Plan. So if you look at the strategic areas, if you can say this, on the top right corner where the arrow is, this is where the strategic planning thinking happens, and this is where the outcomes are located, the 14 outcomes. We look at the strategic planning of the department, which primarily is about the ensuring implementation of the NDP. We find the outcomes to speak to that and link that to the MTSF, that fundamental area. Here, we actually use the tools to monitor the administrative management, the capability in the state to manage with efficiency the resources allocated to the department. We use what we call the management performance assessment tools at provincial level, and at local government, we use the local government management assessment tool. So that gives a sense of how the operations in the administrative machinery work. This component right here seeks to generate feedback from the citizens directly. The citizen-based monitoring is where we have frontline service delivery. We have the presidential hotline where members of the public can call the presidential office and raise areas related to service delivery concerns. The frontline service delivery monitoring, we show up in key service institutions like your police stations, your health facilities unannounced to check the quality of the service being provided and to get a sense of what the citizens feel about those services. All that actually feeds into what we call frontline service delivery, and it informs our assessment on performance on the MTSF, the refinement of targets and indicators. I hope that has. All these programs, whether it's operations, programs under the specific outcomes, issues emanating from frontline service delivery work, any one of them could be subjected to evaluations and prioritize those evaluations to generate evidence around performance, policy areas, areas of policy incoherence that need to be dealt with in government, and that feeds back to the NDP. Having given that overview, today we're focusing on the outcomes. We thought we should share with you what are the classifications, how do we then rate performance of government admins on the outcomes. We use a traffic light system. Others call that just robots. A green in for any performance indicator suggests that the target has been achieved or has been exceeded, or it's almost achieved, or with more effort the target will be achieved. So it's good, the green. The amber indicates some progress or substantial progress towards meeting the target. No one wants to see the red, especially the ministers, because it shows there's no progress towards meeting the target. But for our work, our key area of interest is on the red, because one what government puts mechanisms to unblock whatever it is that is hindering performance on that indicator. The blue shows that the system for measuring the indicator is not yet in place or it is not available. At that time, I can use for instance where we have to use rely on Saturday data on the general household surveys, particularly demographic data. If that data is only available at the end of the year, that's when we're going to have the information available to avoid just having numbers that are not verifiable. Just giving us, members of the committee, an overview of the economic scenario this is based on. The first quarter, things have changed today, developments in China. But we want to contextualize the environment within which we're implementing the NDP, that the environment is unfavorable globally. As you have noticed with recent developments, the global growth remains weak and it's affecting South Africa's major trading partners. The slow global economic recovery due to negatively affecting our export markets and continues to impact on our investment. We note that growth in Africa remains strong for now, but lower commodity prices and high interest rates are a major risk. If you look at South Africa compared to other trading partners, the projection to 2015, 2016 of 2%, 2.1% growth has really changed, as colleagues from trade will testify. there are some causes for poor performance. We want to highlight that in the country we don't, our investment in the productive sector is relatively low. Productive sectors that is primarily in agriculture, followed by in fisheries, in manufacturing, in fishery industries, mining and clearing, electricity, gas and water, and in construction. So if we look at this trend, actually agriculture that probably has the greatest potential for creating jobs is actually among the lowest areas of investment in the country. So that has lagged behind the productive sectors that lag behind the tertiary sector. There's some progress in terms of supporting the national infrastructure plan. Actually, a lot of work is happening in that space. There's progress towards the 75% local procurement target that even though that has been slow in view of conflicting views on the implementation of the policy. Another key hindrance that's staying with us in our economy is the high levels of unemployment. Respective of various interventions. What I want to bring to the attention of committee members here, and see the red area, is just the top line on the graph, which shows the age group 15 to 24. So the high unemployment rate impacts significantly on the youth in the country, and South Africa is a youthful country. We can read the analysis on that slide later on, but wanted to drive that point home. Some brief analysis on the factors contributing to this low growth levels and increasing or double unemployment in the productive sector. We note the weak global economic environment that continues to impact on growth and constrain the historic export markets. Government capacity to identify levers to drive growth is not optimal, and relations with business, though improving, needs a more strategic focus, as we've recently seen maybe this week the interactions with the mining sector. What is to be done? We need to focus more on the implementation of the nine priority areas, the efforts around streamlining the 9.8 plan within the POA is gaining traction. And that plan is going to unlock increased private investment using the infrastructure program. It's going to expand exports, especially outside of Europe and China, by using new opportunities. It's going to focus our trade promotion measures combined with more efficient regulation and possibly export-import financing in Africa. What brings your attention is around the historically excluded and vulnerable groups and small business. These groupings remain vulnerable in our economy. We see that small business is not meeting potential contribution to growth and employment creation. The interventions will be required to support existing and develop new small businesses and cooperatives to facilitate access to formal markets. The areas of outcome that will that creates the best platform for small business development is in the economic cluster, but also in specific departments like rural development and environment, for instance. To advise and develop supporting regulations to unlock SME potential, we'll need to do that with speed. On the issue of regulations, what the proposed needs to be done from a academic perspective is to ensure that the regulations on targeted requirement to support SMME and co-ops are gazetted as a matter of agency, to resolve challenges related to the 30% set aside target for public sector requirements from SMEs and cooperatives. This is the area where we're saying when there has to be preferential treatment for SMEs to enable their entry into the trade space. So the 30% set aside will enable, will serve as that enabler. They should assess it and develop township and rural economies and work with key metros to support reducing red tape for small businesses. On key issues related to water, focusing on bulk water resources. Our analysis showed that there's declining water quality and uncertainties about impact of climate change and water crises have emerged across the globe, including in South Africa. Actually, we have recent experiences show vulnerability of these provinces, our food bank provinces in the Free State, Northwest and KZN, and Mpumalanga that are subjected to drought conditions. You know, the impact thereof on food prices, on production of grains has been felt as we speak. A number of policy interventions have been developed to improve equity in the allocation of water resources and to improve investment in water infrastructure. We have made significant progress on the Makolo and Crocodile River Water Augmentation Project Phase 1. With that, with construction in progress, and also the bottlenecks around that project have been attended to. Commission on the Crocodile River Water Augmentation Project will result in additional 57% of water delivered to the system, which will enable Eskom to commission 4 of its Minduki units and meet the forecast for high water demand scenarios until December 2015. The Uzuvungu Water Project in the Eastern Cape is at preliminary and feasibility study phase and has the potential to provide benefits to the surrounding communities and to provide a stimulus for the regional economy in terms of irrigation, forestry, domestic water supply, and the potential for hydropower generation, amongst others. However, there are still measures, interventions, things to be done to accelerate progress for bulk water resources. The department must develop adequate plans in the case of emergent water sector tablets in the short, medium, and long term. This should lead swiftly to an adoption of an inclusive, integrated national water plan that embraces the entire value chain. We also need to ensure that municipalities have adequate infrastructure and investment plans, including the necessary skills for capital investment and maintenance projects. So in the oversight work, members of the committee could also assist us taking with the respective local government structures what the level of readiness of this infrastructure and investment plans for water. So despite this progress that has been made, there are some slow progress in certain bulk water projects, such as the Uzuvungu Multi-Purpose Development Project, and we also need to accelerate completion of the Makolo Crocodile River project. There are efforts now working with the Department of Water and Sanitation to accelerate the development of that integrated water plan. The plan will cover all parts of water value chain, from resource development to bulk regional infrastructure and recirculation schemes. The team is currently undertaking an assessment of the true extent of the water challenge, in terms of water resource availability, water losses, water demand, quality, climate change, and pollution issues. We also undertaking an overview of water requirements per sector. We're assessing infrastructure functionality and investment at all levels, looking at the policy and regulatory framework, particularly cumbersome processes that delay progress in terms of implementing the water plan. Department of Water and Sanitation also raises issues around the human resource capacity and institutional capacity. Actually, they raise this as a concern in almost every engagement we have with them. Regarding rural development and land reform, we highlight not all the indicators, but those indicators that have a direct impact on the transformation agenda. One of them speaks to focuses on land reform, the percentage of hectares acquired and allocated to smallholder producers. The second one speaks to percentage of land allocated to people living and or working on farms, that is your farm tenants or farm dwellers or farm workers. On both these targets, the performance is on the red, the slow, reasons being slow transformation, labor disputes, and farm worker unrest. So the targets are not likely, will not be met. Just to give an example, the target for 2019 on the MTSF is to allocate 50% of the 1 million hectares of land acquired to smallholders, which is about 50%, and to allocate 10% of that, about 200,000 hectares, to people living and working on farms. Our performance to land allocated to smallholders by quarter four, it was at 23%, below half of the 50% target. For the people working or living on farms, we're just at around 15%, for that quarter. This is one area on the land issues where the 9-point plan is likely to help accelerate performance. This slide just gives an analysis. I won't go through everything in the interest of time, but suffice to know that it's slow transformation in land reform, and it's a great cause for concern, and we're calling on acceleration of efforts towards dealing with this matter. We also note on the second last point on the slide that rural unemployment is rising from 46.1% in quarter four of 2014 to about 47.7% by quarter one of 2015. So instead of declining, our target is to reduce that rural unemployment. But it's a subject, it's a reflection of the unemployment situation throughout the country. The work led by the Deputy President aimed at developing a social compact for the agricultural sector. You will recall the engagement that the DP had in the Western Cape with the farming community, and that social compact, similar to the compact that we have with mining, is intended to help unblock some of the challenges there. On food security, we're on AMBER. The strategic targets were to reduce the number of hectares of underutilized land in communal areas and in recently acquired land reform farms. 2013, the baseline was about 40 million hectares. I want to reduce that by a million by 2019. The performance there, the target is likely to be met with acceleration and specific interventions. Secondly, the intention is to reduce the percentage of households that are vulnerable to hunger. In 2011, we're at 11.5% from 23.8% in 2002. That's a typo, right? The intention is to reduce that 11.1% to 0.5% to 9.5% by 2019. And that target is likely to be met with acceleration. Just to show briefly that the vulnerability to hunger and access to food has been declining from 2002 to 2014. But that drop in vulnerability is likely due to social grants rather than food production initiatives. And the efforts to improve food security, they need to be intensified and accelerated. We also need to finalize the implementation plans on the food security and nutrition policy. On information and communication, focusing on infrastructure, our analysis shows an inadequate infrastructure in rural communities in particular. That it remains a challenge. There are initiatives underway to focus rollout of infrastructure in rural areas whilst minimizing duplication in infrastructure. The coordination of CIP 15 has improved in the last 12 months because there has been engagement with the department and the new minister, the formation of provincial structures for the coordination of ICT infrastructure rollout. The impact thereof has been the alignment of planning in terms of infrastructure rollout, the visible progress reports on implementation and plans aimed at improving access to ICTS. Note the issues around broadband prices, especially data, that though those prices have decreased significantly, further work still needs to be done from both the regulatory and policy point of view. Rapid deployment of electronic communication networks is not fully enabled, thus delaying the large-scale and rapid deployment of ICT infrastructure. Also, the funding for broadband remains a challenge. There are discussions underway. I think that at this stage, probably this is quite advanced with national and provincial treasuries to unlock constraints to funding. We propose things to be done. One, to perfect policy and regulatory interventions to ensure rapid deployment and to reduce the cost of broadband rollout. This will help us, will help government expand ICT access throughout the country. Those interventions will include support of an open access policy regime to change the market structure and reduce barriers to entry and infrastructure duplication. We are suggesting further fast-tracking the implementation of the rationalization of ICT SOCs, that is the broadband, Infraco, Telcom, and CIDAS, in order to streamline and strengthen the rollout of broadband. The unlocking of funding constraints through further engagements with provincial and national treasuries and speeding up a clear strategy for the relevant departments to move towards e-services. E-services in terms of identification documents, crime statistics, e-registries for heavy disease, and all that. Moving on to strengthening society, specific outcomes that deal with this particular theme starts with the basic education of an area of interest for this committee. performance is mixed, as you can see on that slide. But the ICD schools bill program and handing over of those schools, the ICD bill programs include the schools that have been constructed in the Eastern Cape Province. So completing this and handing over, we're on the EBA. The target for 2019 is to have 121 schools down from a baseline of 140 in 2013. The latest available measurement was 106 schools completed, cumulatively from 2011, and 64 headed over. So we know the EBA is because we have not really met 150 targets. But we say with acceleration, the MTSF target by 2019 will be met. The percentage of schools complying with minimum infrastructure norms and standards, the systems to monitor this target will only be in place by end of the year. The same goes with percentage of learners having access to the required textbooks and workbooks in all grades and all subjects. The current measurement is based on delivered books, learner access in all grades and in all subjects is still not measured. So what we're saying is that books could be delivered at a school, but whether a particular book goes into the hand of the learner is a different scenario, and we need specific measurements to determine that. Hence the rating of blue. The percentage of learners who complete the whole curriculum from a baseline of 56% towards an MTSF target of 95%, there is no progress towards meeting the target. And it has not been measured since 2011. The department has does not yet have an instrument to measure this indicator, and the school monitoring system survey scheduled for 2014 has not been done, hence the red rating. This analysis underscores the findings on the data as presented in the last slide. So the progress on ICT schools is improving, but still the target is has not been met. We can hit that with acceleration. Again, within the ICT schools, there are issues of sanitation that had to be dealt with. The infrastructure norms and standards have been published, but we cannot determine the extent to which schools are meeting those norms. And that poses the risk of litigation if the schools are not meeting the norms and standards. The process is developed by DBE to monitor, that's the Department of Basic Education, to monitor build projects are slowly maturing, but some provinces still struggle to spend their education infrastructure budgets. And we'll give examples in those provinces. Systems for distributing learner teacher support materials have improved. However, measuring the target of one textbook per learner for each subject remains a challenge that I indicated earlier. And as well as there's no mechanism for tracking curriculum coverage, improving pass rates at grade 9 and 12 will remain a challenge. Once to be done, we need to improve reporting on progress on ICD and clarify how acceleration will be done. We need to fast-track implementation of processes developed by basic education to monitor build projects and to improve provincial expenditure on education infrastructure budgets. You know, this, especially in the rural provinces like Mpumalanga and North West, we can't have a situation where the expenditure is not moving to build schools. We need to develop a system for tracking whether schools meet the infrastructure norms, And this is critical to ensure that DBE knows the extent of the problem. Structuring systems to measure learner access to teaching and learning materials, and to implement effective training systems for curricular coverage to improve learner performance and the quality of basic education. This slide just gives an overview of the annual national assessment, commonly known as the ANA. Analysis shows that grade 3 targets in both literacy and numeracy have been achieved, including grade 6 home language. Performance in grade 6 and 9 math and first additional language is below par. What needs to be done is to make verification of ANA comparable across the years and to increase support for teachers in grade 6 and 9 and to close the gap. A quick overview of the NCS, the National Senior Certificate. The target is to have learners pass 50% and above in the National Senior Certificate. The analysis shows that the target for bachelor's for math and physical sciences were not met. There was a decline in passes compared to 2013, which was accompanied by fewer number of learners sitting for matric. What needs to be done is to fast-track and strengthen the implementation of the math, science, and technology strategy to ensure improved teacher supply, training, and development. Also to check curricular coverage. On issues related to outcome 2, that is ensuring a long, healthy life for all South Africans, our target, one of our key sub-outcomes is to improve the quality of care. The Office of Health Standards Compliance continuously assesses the quality of health service delivery and entrenches a culture of quality health services. Patient satisfaction surveys conducted in 49% of public sector facilities found that 76% of users of public health services were satisfied with the service provided. On the third outcome, to re-engineer our primary healthcare system, the significant progress made, which also includes improved access to primary healthcare for communities, with 1,748 one-day primary healthcare outreach teams being functional, which exceeded the annual target of 1,500. The district clinic specialist team, with at least 3 specialists, were established across district nationally. On the target, to ensure that HIV and AIDS and tuberculosis are prevented and managed. 9.5 million HIV tests have been conducted against the 2014-15 target of 10 million. That explains the amber that the target is, with acceleration, the target is likely to be achieved. This increased the access to ARV for people living with HIV and AIDS, and that has expanded to 3.1 million people on ARV, exceeding once more the 2014-15 target of 3 million. The screening for TB has been expanded, with 15.2 million people reached, which has exceeded the target of 6 million, almost double. The new Palmer TB default rate and the TBS rate have been declined, have both declined and remain consistent with the target of 2014-15. On the sub-outcome to improve maternal and child health, efforts to prevent mother-to-child transmission of HIV has continued to yield the desired results, with only 1.5% of babies testing HIV positive at 6 weeks. This exceeded the target of 2%. Full immunization coverage rate at 90% for the under 1 year of age was achieved, and it was consistent with the target of 90%. Overall, the performance on the targets set for the health sector on HIV and AIDS and improving maternal and child health are quite pleasing, as you can see. On the target to ensure universal health coverage is achieved through the implementation of the National Health Insurance. We're still on the red, and that is because the finalization of the white paper on NHI has lagged behind. And this has impacted on the production of the NHI bill, which was targeted to be released for public consultation this, for the 2014-15 financial year. The prevention and management of non-communicable diseases, although the health sector has produced the National Strategic Plan for NCDC for 2013-14, the counseling and screening uses of public health services for key NCDCs has significantly lagged behind the set target for 2014-2015. What needs to be done? National Treasury and the National Department of Health must finalize the NHI policy and legislative framework, as well as the funding modality. They need to finalize the review of the NHI pilot site to identify key milestones attained, contract and inform expansion of site. There are other proposals on that slide of what needs to be done. In the interest of time, I will just highlight the second last bullet point that underscores the need to finalize the review of the NIH pilot site to identify key milestones attained and concerns encountered and to inform expansion of those sites. Okay, I'm underscoring it because it's important and I've highlighted it earlier as the second bullet point on that slide. The reason why we're emphasizing that is that Cabinet has called for a PAKISA to deal with this particular issue, and that mini PAKISA has been conducted in the last quarter, the Operation PAKISA on Health. On human settlement, in a nutshell, human settlement has needed to develop a green paper for human settlement, and the approval date for the green paper is September 2015. I know they've revised that target to 2016, to July 2016. They have completed the draft for the green paper, but they still need to do consultations on that. The evaluation on key human settlement strategic plans significant progress has been made on that, and this evaluation was conducted based on the National Evaluation Program. On the indicator to develop a coherent and inclusive approach to land for human settlement, that is the Integrated Settlement Program, we're on EMBER on that. The draft policy framework has been developed, but it still has to be discussed at MINMEC. What we want to highlight on human settlements are the areas of backlog. These are areas that have a direct impact on the transformation or change agenda. For instance, the backlog on the title deeds. The indicator to eradicate the backlog on the title deed to new homeowners. We're not doing very well on that. You know, what that means is when we're building and handing over houses without providing the title deed. The number of households benefiting from informal settlements are waiting against the transformation issue to deal with issues of informal settlements. Our performance numerically on that is not good. So on the policy phase, which will have a long-term benefit on the human settlement department and overall performance, we're on track. But on the key transformational issues,
the performance is great. And this slide actually is an analysis of what I've said. I'll highlight just a few bullet points for members of the committee. On the transformation issue of ensuring, say for instance, the social rental housing program, the performance is unsatisfactory. The social rental housing program is the one that seeks to unlock or to deal with issues of informal settlements. On the strategic backlog, again, we show that the latest figure actually indicates of the 3 million houses that were handed over, only a million that have vacancies, and that has all kinds of risks. And it limits the new homeowners, they can't use their assets to leverage other resources. What must be done is to resolve the performance and targeted definitions on human settlement. That's like a positive issue. We need to scale up upgrading of informal settlements, recontract support programs to ensure that the support is consolidated towards improving that space. Human settlement must define the rental policy framework as a strategy to improve rental delivery. And to finalize outstanding issues around accreditation, to finalize or accelerate completion on the catalytic projects. Catalytic projects like the 50 having 50 projects at the site, that the 50 catalytic or 250 integrated projects that will engage both the private and public sector in the construction of houses. We need to expedite the second bullet point, the agency transfers for reducing the backlog, and to complete the green paper and coordinate with sector consultation for tabling in Parliament. On safety and security, on the target dealing with the detection rate, we're not doing very well, it's on the red. It's performing below the baseline on the percentage of detected contact crime cases that result in trial ready case dockets. The annual target has been met. On the target to ensure an effective and efficient criminal justice system, specific indicators, number of criminal verbal cases in court, number of criminal court cases finalized with verdict, number of criminal court cases finalized through alternative dispute resolution mechanisms, we're doing okay. On the target, to reduce the corruption in the public and private sector, we're on amber. That means some progress is being made, but the target will not be met without acceleration. Members of the committee will note the indicator is limited to corruption where the amount benefited per case is more than 5 million. What is to be done to enhance implementation of crime prevention and combating practices, in particular increased visual policing, to ensure better partnerships with citizens by operationalizing community policing forums and especially community safety forums, to support or intensify moral regeneration initiatives within the social cluster, and to increase the investigative, forensic, and prosecuting capacity. We also need a corruption combating strategy to be implemented with as a matter of agency, and to deal with the legislative environment to manage the border management agency. All departments must develop individual draft master plan, inline motivational drugs, master plan to address substance and drug abuse. We need to finalize and get approval of GEMSA's strategy and action plan. Moving on to building a service-oriented public service. We'll just give members of the committee a brief overview. The department contributing to this is local government in particular, but also rural development. So basic services is a special issue. It's something that the committee must take note of. On the indicator to ensure sustainable and reliable access to basic services, which includes access to water, access to sanitation, access to refuse removal, reducing the budget, using public sanitation in formal areas, access to electricity for households both on the grid and off the grid. The MTSF charges are indicated there, and our latest available measurements mostly fall just below the target. But because basic service is a fundamental human right, we want to push for universal performance of those targets. So they are mostly related to it. That's just the analysis to show the pace of delivery is not satisfactory to meet the 2019 targets, particularly if meeting universal targets is the driving force. The household connections to the grid, the target could be met with scaling up. What needs to be done is to improve service delivery performance with a very focused project management, with the adoption of a focused project management approach, and better planning, limiting institutional constraints, particularly at local government level. To this end, a business strategy was developed and approved by Cabinet to unblock this obstacle and to strengthen coordination across spheres of government. And that strategy will be managed and coordinated by MISA and will comprise the key sector departments, that is COPTA and other departments, National Treasury and the DPME. The objective of the joint operation will be to fast track the planning and implementation of projects and operations and maintenance requirements in the priority districts. Members of the committee will note that Cabinet has identified 26 priority districts as vulnerable. So when it comes to meeting basic services, focus is given first and foremost to those to the vulnerable districts. On financial and administrative management, in the past year, municipalities have been supported to develop post-audit action plans and to ensure they are payable to the council. The 271 municipalities where have been assessed for adequacy in addressing the issues raised by AG. If you recall the slide we showed on how government is managed, we did indicate some tools that are used to assess the operation capability of the provincial and local municipalities, and this is where we use one of the two. The debt owed by municipalities has been responded to, but debt owed to municipalities is not given sufficient attention. And that debt to municipalities is close to 100 billion, almost double the amount since 2009. And we wonder why functionality of this municipality is problematic. What is to be done is to support work that has been initiated in the current period and to ensure that the audit impacts, the audit outcomes are achieved. The extent of irregular expenditure is a concern, particularly in respect of those municipalities where contracts have been awarded to friends and families. This goes beyond just an audit issue and borders on corruption and nepotism. The serious cases to be investigated by DCOG and National Trader and the Cabinet must be advised of appropriate interventions. There's a need for a clear policy response to address the low payment levels and how to deal with the accumulated debt, much of which is considered to be undercoverable. We give an overview of the 30-day payment analysis. The task provides a trend in respect of the rent value of invoices that were paid after 30 days from the date of its receipt for past 12 months. That is from 2014 March to February 2015, together with the comparative period from March 2013 to February 2014. As you can see, the light blue is 2013, the red is 2014, and the colorblind, is that blue? 2015. Bluish 2014. But you see the declining trend. Just to speak to that analysis, during January 2015, the rent value of invoices paid after 30 days from the date of its receipt amounts to 382 million, while the amount for February 2015 amounts to 338 million, thereby representing a marginal improvement of 1%. When comparing the amount paid after 30 days in February 2014 with that of the amount paid in February 2015, it's evident that there has been a regression of 15.6% amounting to 51 million. For the period January 2014 to February 2015, the average rent value of invoices paid after 30 days from the date of its receipt amounts to 441 million, whereas the average for the period January 2015 to February 2015 amounts to 380 million, representing a 13.8% improvement. The improvement in rent value is about 61 million. The average for the period January 2014 to February 2014 is distorted due to the rent value at the time of the invoices that were paid. What is to be done? We need to build effective institutions and to ensure stable leadership. Available data indicates that on average, heads of departments stay in a post for only 2.7 years. That is a very short time. Actually, it takes about 3 years for a head of department to really get into the functions and the operations of the institution. In addition to the high turnover that often accelerates after the appointment of the new executive authorities, the MPLET, which is the Management and Performance Assessment Tool conducted by CCME, shows that 64% of departments either do not have performance agreements in place or it was submitted after the due date and assessments were not done. What needs to be done is to ensure that, actually, what needs to be done here has already been done as I speak. The special unit has been established in CPME to investigate cases where there is late or non-payment of correct invoices within 30 days. And the CFO will speak to that. The concluding plan seeks to underscore the critical role of planning, monitoring, and evaluation. and thereby also explained opportunities for the committee to use the service and facilities within the CPME. We want to explain briefly why it's important to do planning, monitoring and evaluation. There is simply a way to know where we want to go as a country, as envisioned in the NDP, and as government with the medium-term strategic framework and the outcomes. As government, we need to focus more on outcomes that we want to achieve, not just the activities that we're doing. And then we'll have to plan systematically how to get there. And in this case, we're using outcome delivery, agreements, program planning, evidence-based policy making and objective analysis. We have to monitor whether we are getting there. And how we do this is using key tools like your management performance assessment tools to look at the functionality of the administrative core of government through frontline service delivery to get perceptions or experiences, lived experiences by citizens, and to track performance on the outcomes. And then we evaluate if we're getting to where we want to go. What impact are we having on society? Are we being effective, efficient? Are we delivering value for money? Basically, if we don't know where we'll, how we will make it happen, nothing will happen, isn't it? So to that end, we're saying the need to strengthen planning data, you know? What we see, our common trend in previous administrations was to have different heads of government using different data sets and different assumptions in their plans. This trend is still there within government, but we're trying systematically to deal with that. The use of different data sets based on different assumptions results in plans that are over or understate what the proposed action can be, and therefore there have been announcements made based on this policy or intended assumptions tend to be misleading or unrealistic. Now, using Statistics South Africa and the capacity within CPME, we're working on processes to improve data quality, including updating the social accounting metrics using census 2011 data and developing a growth accounting framework. Both outputs will inform the modeling of the socio-economic impact of policies, leading to better policy decisions, including the monitoring of the 9-point plan, not plan. Notably, Statistics South Africa and DPME report to the same ministry, and that is to the same minister. That is meant to ensure that collaboration. There's also that capacity within the monitoring environment that help government as a whole look at the effectiveness of the engine room. That the management performance assessment tools, the local government management improvement model. We'll urge members of the committee to actually call for presentations on this. What is the finding of from MPET in terms of the performance of departments administratively at core? What is the performance of municipalities? Those tools look at the management performance areas based on four parts. One is the strategic management, that's the planning, program management, monitoring and evaluation, the issues of governance and accountability, service delivery improvement, management structures, ethics, delegation, risk management issues. Another area is the financial management, supply chain issues, transfer payment, liability, revenue. It looks at human resource and systems management, HR strategy, employment relations, HR practices, filling of vacancies. How long does it take to fill vacancies and things like that? Just to give you a sense of, just a sense of the management performance assessment measures, the city one standard on 488. On service delivery improvement, those are the standards. If for instance, the standard definition to have, for a department to have an improved service delivery charter, that's an example. Service delivery improvement plan and to adhere to those plans. So if the department does not have the charter at all, the rating is red. If the department has a draft and has the charter displayed on a public page, the level rating is amber light or dark amber. Level 3, the department constantly monitors. It implements and monitors compliance to that charter. Management considers the monitoring report, and the report is used to inform improvements to the business processes, and that is level 4. So that kind of information helps the department to reflect on its operations and to make improvements. We're also part of the monitoring evaluation space deals with the implementation of the national evaluation system, and that should help us understand why things are working or not working and how they can be strengthened. We don't have that national evaluation system that focuses on strategic priorities using the national and provincial evaluation plans. Both evaluations, they range from diagnostic evaluation before programs are implemented, design to design and implementation and impact and economic evaluation. We have completed 38 so far, and there are several in the plan for 2014-15. The target was about 52. There's an evaluation repository on the website of the department if our members want to go and access the report. Just to give you a taste of the questions that are answered within those evaluations, we picked the areas of interest for members of the committee. In education on grade R, we want to know the impact of grade R on participant learner performance. On land reform, there was an evaluation on the rehabilitation and development program. I wanted to know whether the program is developing beneficiaries to participate in commercial production as the intended objective, were the resources used effectively, and how could recap be strengthened. On the business process services, an evaluation conducted on that, is the program managed under EDG, wanted to see how is the program working and how can it be strengthened. On the comprehensive rural development program implemented by the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform, wanted to know whether the CFDP is achieving its goals of transforming or creating new integrated rural communities that are economically self-sufficient in a way. How effectively are institutional arrangements supporting that implementation, and what is the value for money? All these evaluations we could access are accessible, and the findings are telling. There are measures taken to improve monitoring and evaluation of the medium-term strategic framework implementation. The first one is to ensure the targets on the MTSF, the outcome targets written into the performance agreements of the ministers that are signed with the president. So when in assessing the performance of the minister, then the outcome chapter for that ministry is used as a base. DPME changes the strategic plans and annual performance plans of national and provincial departments to ensure that they reflect the targets and actions in the MPSF. Because what we found was tendency to commit, make pronouncements and commitments, and if those are not included within the AGPs and strategic plans of departments, then there are no resources, there is no focus on that. So plans, AGPs are not approved if the MTSF priorities have not been incorporated. These targets and actions of the MTSF should be reflected in the performance agreements of heads of departments and senior officials. And then management performance assessments are undertaken across the 3 spheres of government using MPED and LGME. We also then use implementation forums to discuss and prepare the reports based on the MTSF chapters, and the reports are then presented to cabinet by the coordinating ministers. Actually, this week the coordinating ministers started today until Thursday to present the reports on the program of action, the MTSF, through the cabinet committee. Performance dialogues and expenditure reviews are held jointly by CME and the Little Treasury to ensure alignment between planning, budgeting, monitoring, and evaluation. And of course, there's ongoing frontline service delivery to ensure services for citizens are held. This now we move on to our overall expenditure of programs as CPME, which is the second part of this work. And I'll, through your chair, hand over to the CFO. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. I think we only have 2 slides on this topic. As you can see from the slides we have there, that the department spent 80.9% of its first quarter drinks, which is significantly below our own target of 95%. The primary reason for this underspending was there was a payment that we had to make to for the National Income Dynamic Study, which was a 19 million rand payment that happened a month late. So the payment did happen, but it couldn't be included in the payment for the first quarter. And we also have a number of fairly high-level vacant posts, or at least we had during this quarter. Most of those posts have now been filled, or at least the process is completed. We're just waiting for the final paperwork, and those posts will be filled. That's with the exception of our director general post. There is, under program one, there's a slight delay in some of our IT projects, but generally we're on target to spend our full budget. And the outcomes monitoring and evaluation program, some of the evaluation projects are a little bit on schedule, but again, I believe we are on track to spend our entire budget. Same with institutional performance monitoring and evaluation. They are actually on target spending their full budget. The presidential hotline is part of this program, and we pay CIFA R1 million a month for the support they provide to us for the presidential hotline. One of the invoices was late, so that's why they're underspent by R1 million. The national planning branch was transferred from the presidency to the department during the previous financial year, and this is currently our major area of under expenditure. The, as I said, the 19 million invoice that was supposed to be paid under that program has since been paid, which still leaves about 10 million in unspent quarter one drawings. This is primarily due to the fact that the previous National Planning Commission's term ended in May, and the new Planning Commission we only expect to be appointed, I think, in September, well, this month actually. So there was a bit of a break in the normal programs that this branch would run, and therefore the under expenditure today. I think if we can go to the next slide, I think I think I summarized all the major reasons why this is important. Just as a historically, in 1314, the department spent 99.7% of its budget, and in 1415, the department spent 96.6% of its budget. So I think we do have the capacity to spend the budget we have, and as a matter of fact, we have submitted to National Treasury requests for additional funding because there are significant areas where the department needs to expand its current operations. For instance, in the 30-day payment unit that was mentioned by the previous presenter, that we are required to set up. At the moment, we are using pulling staff away from other functions, and we hope to see funding for those particular new functions that we have to perform for the next financial year. Thank you.
In conclusion, we say that much more work needs to be done to ensure we can effectively and get a good picture of performance, improving data, improving analysis, integrating tools to give a 30-degree view of performance throughout the whole of government. The DPME tools provide invaluable resources for portfolio committee in understanding how government investment is working, what impact it's having, and how it can be strengthened. We also need to improve our joint efforts working with National Treasury and DPSA around performance dialogues, as well as linkage between SCOA and portfolio committees on value for money. We say, how can we assist you to improve oversight and decision making, and we always at your service. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, if you want to raise questions, now is the time to do so. Clarities and so on, and comments. Honorable Fick, Honorable Masupe, Honorable Nyalong, go ahead.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. The committee, as a appropriations committee who deals with finances, that we only receive information on one side, and also that there wasn't, the slide wasn't submitted in advance. So it is disappointing that that happens on the Chairperson, because, as I've indicated. Having said that, I would just like to raise some points on some of the slides. I see there are recommendations as well, just as overall comment, but I wonder, and maybe I should ask instead of wondering, who will implement these recommendations? Because there are some serious shortcomings in the monitoring and the evaluation. So my question would be then, who's responsible? Well, I know who, but who would then provide this information so that those recommendations are enforced? That what now? But if I go to the slides, I will start with slide number 6. Can we just ask, I see there's a substantial amount of money that has been spent, and it was indicated that there's over a million, I didn't get the figure, but this frontline services and the monitoring, and I see that there's also a presidential hotline. Can we get an indication of the volume of calls that are received by this hotline? In other words, is it value for money? Slide number 9. We talk about the trading partners of South Africa or global growth as it remains weak. But in the presentation, it was highlighted, China was highlighted as the economy that is slowing is resulting in the economy of South Africa that is also now being affected. But if you look at the figures, I see that China and India, specifically or effectively, their growth is 6.8 and 7.5%, so surely if those are very partners, then our growth should also be favorable the same way their growth is favorable. I see on the same slide we've got a figure of 2% and no into it. 2% I'm looking at 2015, that's right, that's where we are now, it's 2015. We know that figure is incorrect. We know it's closer to 1.5%. So, you know, it's just again concerning when we get a figure that is not showing the point in the truth picture of what is happening. We also hear that one of the major economies, and again this is probably not a decision for now, but maybe you could comment on this, is that the United States is an economy that's probably going to be growing. So why do we focus on China and all the slowing economies instead of the growing economies? Slide number 10. There's an explanation in the last bullet point, the last statement, which says progress towards 75% local procurement targets is also exposed due to conflicting views on the implementation of the policy. Can you just give an explanation of who is conflicting and why is it conflicting? Why is that 75%? I mean, it's easy. 75% is simple. You just make sure that you divide the procurement to 75% of local content. That's not too difficult. Slide number. Sorry, it seems as though I'm blaming you. It's not. I'm just, you're the one that's doing the monitoring, so I'm just a little concerned. It's not your point. I see you looking at me back as if to say, you know, I didn't do anything about it, but it's just a point that I'm blaming. Slide number 12. Okay, now, what I wanted to do there is I just wanted to, again, refer to the slide that deals with a weak global economic environment, and I wanted to highlight the fact that our trading partners are growing by those high amounts of 6.8 and 7.5%. Slide number 13 deals with small business marketing potential. Now, again, you know, there isn't sort of an explanation as to why that is the case, because it is problematic. I mean, we had a recently formed Department of Small Business Development, and at the moment, if it's not meeting its potential, it is concerning because we know that small businesses in growing economies and successful economies make up in excess of 90% of the economy. So if our small business is not getting the attention and the support that it deserves, then surely we have a problem. We have a problem. So, you know, we'd rather fix it sooner rather than later. So, you know, I see the recommendations are that regulations and all the challenges, you know, related to 3% set aside. Now, while that is a policy, we went to an oversight visit a while ago, and what we picked up was that while there's an opportunity for government to ensure that 30% of the allocation of work is given to small businesses, it's not happening. So it's good about reporting it here, but again, my question, if it is not done, what then? You can't just keep on coming and reporting, and then you go back, and then you come back the second quarter, and then you report, and then you come back. You know, something seriously needs to be done about this non-compliance of these policies. Slide number 14. The third bullet point talks about this water augmentation project phase one at the construction phase. Do we have an idea of what the expected completion date was and what the due date is, if to see how far we are? Because as we know, whenever there's an extension or of the due date, then it goes along with an additional cost, as we've seen with the Medupi project, which was originally 69 billion and currently sitting on 105 billion there. So, no, I'm just talking about any project that is late. I'm saying that there's always an increase in the cost of it. So my question was, what is the due date of that Mokolo, that sounds nice for him, that water augmentation project, and Chair. The most slide, slide number 16. Deals with a whole lot of plans, and again, yeah, we don't have any completion date with these plans that are highlighted on page 16. So I'll continue. Slide number 18 has an interesting information. The last bullet point, second last, beg your pardon. I thought that they say rural unemployment is rising from 46.1%. We were informed somewhere that unemployment in the urban areas is increasing because of the rural urban migration. Now it's reported here that unemployment in the rural areas is also increasing. So surely there must be another reason why your unemployment in your urban areas is also increasing. Slide number... Okay, now with slide number 19, and I'm just going to raise this one. I've got a few slides which deals with this. We talk about the report here that the target is likely to be met. Now, I see there's a lot of these tables that indicates either the target is likely to be met or the target might not be met. But I don't see any dates there, so in the target, would the target be met on the due date? And maybe that information would be useful just to see again. My concern is regarding the cost of a particular program or project. I'm not sure, I'm not going to take up too much more time because I know my colleagues also want to have a piece of the cake. Yeah, okay, again, yeah, I've got a table on page 24, which is similar to my request. Salami. Slide number. Slide number 28. I see there's an analysis of the National Senior Certificate done, and mission is made of mathematics. I know there's they tend to include maths literacy. Can I ask, is that maths that's analyzed, is that just maths, or is it the maths literacy that's included in that analysis? And then, okay, these are not numbered, so I'm going to have problems there. I'll just give one more number here. And then I've got slide number 45. It's not numbered this slide, but it's the 45th slide. The last bullet point on that page says, and this deals with the debt of municipalities, which obviously is unacceptably high. But the last bullet point says, the clear policy response is needed to address low payment levels and how to deal with the cumulative debt, much of which is considered to be unrecoverable. Now that's concerning again, because the municipalities get a lot of the the question is, how much effort has been made by municipalities to recover that debt? Surely it should not be unrecoverable. So I just want to a certain extent disagree with that, but I have a problem with it. The last slide, Honourable Chair, on slide number 47. We talk about an increase in increase in land value. Okay? Increase in land value that is paid. Now, is it correct to compare last year's amount with the amount that is paid this year, or should a comparison be made with the amount of invoices that have been submitted versus the amount that have been paid within 30 days? Because it might just be different figures that are submitted for payment. So I just said that question for clarity. Thanks for not over sharing this. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Yes, thank you for the presentation. With all due respect, Dr. Nomani, I think my colleague was very polite to you in saying it's a pity. If I can refer you to the invitation letter that was sent to you by this committee before you presented this presentation to us, it requested you to give us a summary of progress on 14 outcomes, and it specified many of them, and I know some of them you've completely ignored, such as the South African Police Services of Justice and Constitutional Development, are not covered at all in the presentation. Perhaps you'd like to give us an explanation as to why you chose to ignore those two departments. Then our presentation also requested, or perhaps I should say, also requested that the presentation be submitted by the latest 12 o'clock on Thursday, the 27th of August. We received them at 4 o'clock on the 31st of August. That's not my time to go through a report like this and try and get some proper insight into it. I feel like we're being treated with contempt with all due respect, and I'd like an explanation. Also, as my learned friend or my colleague here said, the two most important slides for our purposes are the ones we've not given and we presented to here. Now, the request that we gave to you was a summary of progress on 14 outcomes. Now, a summary of progress on a department like ours must surely imply its financial progress. What have you done with the money that was allocated to you in terms of your budget? And are we on track with spending? Are we on track with achieving the outcomes in relation to that spending? So I don't really have any answers to that. I could go for quite some time on the presentation itself, because there are a number of things that I think are certainly needing to be unpacked and examined and interrogated. Just for example, you set up the classification of performance just green, amber and red. Now the green includes target almost being achieved or target will be achieved. This can't be right, because it means that green can cover a huge area. Green must either be, either the target was achieved or wasn't achieved. There's not two ways about it. If you set a target, you either achieve it or you don't. If you achieve it, it's green. If you don't, it's some other color. But it can't be green if it almost been achieved or if it might one day be achieved. So I had a problem with that for a start. I also queried the, I don't see a slide number on there. I think it's slide number 9 that my colleague also referred to, the global economic outlook. Not one comparison is given for another country in Africa. Surely we as an African country are competing with other African countries in the global market. Surely it would be sensible for us to compare ourselves with other economies in our own continent, for Nigeria, Egypt, wherever it might be, but none of those figures are included here. We only include areas that are way away from us, but one can have some comparative figures a bit closer to home. It might give us a better picture. Because we keep on saying that the causes for our poor performance is we're still struggling with the overall global economic slowdown, or this, whereas many economies have been doing very well, because the global crisis was now, I think, about 6 years ago, and many countries have recovered substantially since then and are doing remarkably well, and yet we keep blaming this for our situation. Surely we need to stop blaming somebody else and start looking closer home and discovering why are we not doing well? Not why is the rest of the world not doing well or doing well as the case may be, but why, what's our problem? Why are we not getting anywhere? I also had a query about the city on slide 10, progress towards 75% of the procurement target. I don't understand how there can be conflicting views on the implementation of the policy. I mean, the policy is a policy that must be implemented. And now we're having people running around ducking and diving. That slide as well, I've had some difficulty trying to work out exactly what this graph was telling us. Because the top it says, private investment in the productive sector, relatively low. Firstly, I'd want to know what you define by the productive sector. What is that actually referring to? And then private investment, I think it's fairly obvious. But then you've got this thing there that says GDFI, 2005 prices, main economic sectors, and rands in millions. And then you've got a number of lines on a graph here that show figured up one side and years along the bottom in various sectors of the economy. Maybe you could just explain to us what exactly you were trying to show us in that graph. Unemployment remains stubbornly high, virtually unchanged. From where I sit, and I know I have a ideological differences in government because just the way things are. But you don't mention anywhere the fact that we have huge labour problems. Unemployment remains stubbornly high, but nowhere is our labour legislation referred to as any way affecting the situation. And as far as I'm concerned, that's one of the main problems, because we're trying to drive a capitalist economy with communist ideologies, and of course the two are uncomfortable partners. You have to try and find some way of making the two work together. And at the moment, part of the reason for our poor employment rates is because of the policies we have as regards labour. Because the capitalist side of the economy doesn't want to employ the communist side of labour, for obvious reasons. And I think that that's what's driving problems. Surely we need to accept that fact and try and address the issue somehow. It doesn't help just to ignore it. It's not going to go away. It's part of what we're dealing with, and we need to address it. If I could then refer you to... what is to be done? Sorry, just another point, generally speaking, is you mentioned about reducing red tape. I have a particular problem with it in the sense of, we say on slide 12, in your second bullet point under the heading, what is to be done, improving regulatory efficiencies at all levels of government. And the next bullet point, first on this, more efficient regulation and possibly export import finance. We speak about this regulation. Regulation is this thing that we see as compliance, cross speaking. The government introduces laws that say you've got to comply with all these regulations. And then government employs all of the people to make sure people are complying with those. So in the public sector has to employ all of the people to make sure what's done by government is happening. This is all non-productive. It's just adding employment everywhere, but it doesn't produce any money. And it's causing a massive movement of money and effort into non-productive things, the ticking of boxes. But if we reduce red tape, we're going to reduce all that employment that it creates. So how are you going to address this issue? Ideally, yes, let's get rid of all the red tape, because it causes a lot of trouble. But in doing so, you're going to remove a lot of employment as well, because you can't have the one without the other, because the one is what creates the other. So I just want to know how you would suggest we're going to sort out this red tape story, because it has been an issue that's been around for some time, but you don't say how you're going to do it without creating further problems in our economy. Slide 14, bulk water resources. I have a huge problem with this whole issue of the water, because those set of Odessa and designed our constitution acknowledged that one of the main things people in this country need is access to water. And here we are, 20 years later, we're still talking about planning for water. What have we been doing? Why are we still planning? You're the department of monitoring and planning, and you're still telling us we need to plan some more. We've still got to get plans in place. A national water plan is needed. What's gone wrong? Why have we wasted so much time and so much money, and we're still talking about, let's get a plan together and sort things out? It's hugely worrying, because we spend huge amounts of money on things we really don't need. We don't spend money on things we do need and that are absolutely vital. I have a problem with it. So please address me on this, because here you say, develop adequate plans in case of emergent water sector turbulence. What does that actually mean? What is emergent water sector turbulence? Are you talking about turbulence in the water or in the sector? I can't quite get my head around what was intended there. And again, you say things like, ensure that municipalities have adequate infrastructure. How are we going to ensure that they have adequate infrastructure? Surely it's the job of the municipality to make sure it's got what it needs. That's what it's there for. I'm skipping over a lot of things because I don't consider there's any particular point in just going over and over the same ground in each department. See, I have a problem with statements like work led by the deputy president developing a social compact for the agricultural sector is likely to accelerate transformation. Well, yes, but that's just a hopeful saying. It's likely to have a certain result. As a department that's dealing with monitoring and evaluation, surely we should be a little more specific, a little more definite, and just say it's likely to have some result that we hope it's going to have. Will it have that result? Does it have that result? If it won't, then why are we bothering with it? Is there something we can do to try and change the setup? Then a couple of your other slides here, slide 19. First one, indicators number of hectares of underutilized land in communal areas calculated for production. The baseline, 4 million hectares, transferred by March 2013 are underutilized. Then you say 20% of the target met by 2014, 200,000 hectares. Now, I don't know how you get to that figure, because 20% of 4 million is 800,000, not 200,000. And then you say the latest available measurement is 156,000. Which is below the 200,000, which is way below the 800,000, and then you say the note is target likely to be met. This didn't make sense to me. Sorry, maybe I'm misunderstanding it or reading the wrong thing into it, but I couldn't see where you were getting to that. Reduction in percentage of households vulnerable to hunger. You don't give us a percentage in your latest available measurement. You give us figures. Although in the baseline and the target, you talk about a percentage. Can't we keep the same values right through? If you're going to give us numbers, stay with numbers. If you're going to give us a percentage, stay with the percentage. It's very hard to compare numbers with a percentage without converting everything. I just ask for the state of consistency. Can you do that rather, please? I see so many negatives in what is stated here. Inadequate infrastructure. Aimed at improving access. Work still needs to be done. It is not fully enabled. Delaying the large scale remains a challenge. You know, we're just talking about all the things that are wrong. And by now we shouldn't be. We should be saying this is what we've fixed. We've done this, we've done that, we've done that. We're on the road to here. Instead of just pointing out all these things that we really still need to do and should in reality have happened already. I just had a question on slide 22 of the ICT infrastructure. I'm looking at funding constraints to further engagement of provincial and national areas. Is there insufficient budget for this actual purpose? Did the department not budget for the broadband? Just a question I have one. Why do we need to have further engagements to unlock funding constraints? Was it not budgeted for? Or is the money just being held by somewhere for some reason? Because if it wasn't budgeted for, then we obviously need to take on this portfolio committee and find out why they didn't budget for what they've obviously got to do. Yes, quality of basic education is another huge problem. Just as an example, and I don't want to belabor the point again, slide 24, the last part of that table. Percentage of learners who complete the whole curriculum with a baseline of 53%, a target of 95%, and it says the department does not yet have an instrument to measure this indicator, and the school monitoring survey schedule for 2014 has not been done. And we say there's no progress towards meeting the targets, it's not been measured since 2011. Why not? What happened? Who dropped the ball? We can't just say it just didn't happen. Surely we need to try and have some kind of answer to this. I know you've been out there, I'm not blaming you again, as my colleague said. It's just when you see a question or a statement like this, did you interrogate that? When you got this information from the department, did you say what happened? Why does it just stop in 1911 and everybody decides, oh, we've measured enough now, we don't have to bother any further? Surely we need to follow these things through. The Department of Basic Education seems to be failing all around from what I can see on this. So just a question for clarity. On slide 25, bullet number 3, processes developed by DBE to monitor bullet projects slowly maturing. But some provinces still struggle to spend their education infrastructure budgets. They were given some percentages here, but are these what they spent or what they didn't spend? Because their one says here spent below average. So I'm not sure whether we're saying this is how much was not spent or this is how much was spent. Then there's a number of percentages. They can just have what those actually are, please. I think I've covered mainly what my sort of overall concern, but without going into all the detail everywhere. This is mainly the further note I made on here was about the same sort of things, but just related to different departments. The way we're stating things in a very negative sense. I know it can be a very negative situation. I just said a couple of specific questions again on some performance issues, but I think I'm going to pass that. All right, I just wanted to ask you, sustainable human zeppelins, 3S, slide 36. We're talking about the type of impact that largely remains unaddressed, and the deficit in transferring vitals to new social residents means the backlog is growing. Once again, I would like to know, why is that happening? Are there not conveyances busy doing these transfers all the time? Surely we've employed a bunch of either state advisors or conveyances who are capable of doing this job, and surely they're busy working at it. Because I've been hearing the story about title deeds for many years now. When I was working for the Department of Housing and Housing, it was a major issue then, and that's 10 years ago. We weren't getting the title deeds out. We're still not doing it. I don't see it appearing on the budgets of any departments. Have you any idea what's going on? Because it's something that we really need to look into and give the instructions to the conveyances and get them working, because it's a major problem. I know that the residents in settlements where they've been allocated land are crying out for title deeds. They can't gain access to capital. They can't vote to pay for a loan if they don't have a title deed. It would unlock huge potential, huge amounts of capital that can be injected into the economy and used by people to fund businesses with and all sorts of things, and we just don't do it. And it's tripping our economy. Just a serious question I had about it. Thank you. What is to be done? This is slide 41. I just didn't see anything in your many what is to be done that refers to punishments. You know, when people do things wrong, they should be punished. That's the sort of basis of our law. If you commit a crime, it shouldn't just be investigated and prosecuted, but the offender, if convicted, should be punished. But we never speak anywhere about punishing anybody for any wrongdoing. We just say we must investigate and prosecute, but we never speak about punishment. And I think that's half the problem, is people don't get punished. And when they do, they get a very lenient sentence, and they walk off after a few months and go and do it again. If we had some effective punishment, I'm sure a lot of it wouldn't happen in the first place. I'm not suggesting necessarily that there's criminal activity going on, but in many instances, I'm sure the reports you get must surely trigger something in your mind to say there's potentially something criminal happening here, and we should get in and have a look at it and see whether it is in fact the case. I think I've said enough really about the access to basic services. It's the same thing again about border issues and so on. Thank you, Chair. I think I should leave it there. But one last question, just for clarity for me, on slide 46, you just say Rough 4 provides a genuine respect to the rand value of invoices that were paid after their days. I wasn't sure looking at that, is that paid by the municipality or to the municipality? Well, it's just a question, right? Because I wasn't sure whether we were talking about collections or the municipality was paying suppliers. Thank you.
Another panel?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also like to appreciate the briefing by Dr. Zakani Govani and the CFO. My first question is, what was the cost of the underfunding for program two, especially as we, you know, that this committee, it only looks onto the money, nothing else. And the other one is, how much was projected for the first quarter expenditure in this program? And then, given the fact that Operation Takisa is one of the president's flagship programs, we want to know how far in terms of producing the next report by the end of the financial year. And then, you talked about the delay on getting green or white paper. I just want to check how long must it take, according to you. And then, on the issue of the youth, as we all know that we've got a problem of What is the strategic function of the National Youth Development Program? Shall this not overlook the role and mandate of the National Youth Development Agency in implementing youth policy and system function? I also want to check, what is the state of affairs with regard to the payment of invoices within 20 days at the second 38 of the PFMA? What is the plan and time frame to fill all the most critical vacant posts in the department? And then, also on the outcome, monitor and evaluation and administration program reflect the next highest growth rate, primarily due to increase in spending on compensation of employees. Why is that the case? And then, lastly, CFO, you have talked about the delay in salary adjustments for senior managers. What was the cause? Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, members. Let me allow the department to respond to the questions the members have posed. I do want to make this point that perhaps some of the questions that have been raised would be a lot more relevant when we meet these departments that we are going to meet, some of whom are the departments that we ask you to speak to in your briefing. And while members are legitimately asking the question relating to those departments, I do want to say that a lot more engagement is going to be taking place with those departments, and as per our program. But I'm not saying that you should then not answer those questions. I'm just alerting you to that fact. So that when we engage with you again, you would be aware that we would have compared what you are telling us and with what the departments would be saying when we engage with them. So that is it. The other comment that I probably would want to make before you respond is that maybe talking to the economic issues, as has been raised by one of the members, and he made the point that you're comparing South Africa with the countries outside the African continent. What would be interesting for you to do, not now, perhaps in the future when you look into the problem, that issue. Because I would suspect that South Africa compares itself with the developing nations at one point as its peers, like China, Brazil, Russia, but equally so comparing itself, measuring itself against its trading partners, the Eurozone and the USA, and the level of development that South Africa has had over the decades. And so that would inform the economic base from which South Africa compares itself with other countries, as compared to the economic base, for instance, of the a number of African countries, particularly Sub-Saharan Africa, which is developing quite ahead of South Africa percentage wise. And then, of course, you must think about the economy base from which they rise. Those sub-Saharan African countries. Just a little example to tell you, such as the fact that the South Africa's economic infrastructure is ahead of economic infrastructure in the rest of the African continent. We might have problems with electricity, but indeed we have had electricity over time as compared to the South African states. You look at the regulations relating to the financial sector, for instance, which is one of our strong areas that we have a well-regulated financial sector, a very strong financial sector indeed in the country. And our regulations have actually assisted our financial sector not to fall into the trap that the financial sector in the U.S. Fell into and caused a global economic crisis in 2008. Not to speak of the Eurozone sovereign debt crisis that followed on the heels of the U.S. Crisis, the junior crisis. So all of those factors speak for themselves when you compare South Africa and the rest of the African continent. We are not looking down upon our African brothers and sisters. We are not. We are simply saying that we must compare in a manner that makes economic sense. And perhaps that's the reason why we are now saying that South Africa's economic growth is going to be better informed by what goes on in the African continent, because Africa is currently the economic growth point. If you compare, for instance, trade, you'd notice that South Africa has been trading a lot more with Europe and the USA, and only 10% of trade has been happening between South Africa and the rest of the African continent. We even need to increase that. And in fact, it is increasing. As evidence will show, a lot of South African business people are now into the African economy. And so these are all the things that we've got to be doing. So those are the issues. The last comment I'd like to make is the issue related to labor legislation and in, of course the insinuation that we are conducting capitalist economy with communist labor laws. Which speaks to the issue that some people have raised about labor flexibility. And I don't know whether Europe is conducting capitalist economy within labor, communist labor laws, because labor laws in Europe are just as, perhaps even as a lot less insensible than South African labor laws. In fact, that is so. That labor laws in Europe are a lot more insensible than in South Africa. And so when we speak about labor flexibility and suggest that labor laws in South Africa are too stringent, then we must think again, because it means that Europe, capitalist Europe, had lived side by side with communist labor. If that is how we interpret the labor laws in South Africa, and I don't think that is how we should refer to labor laws in South Africa as communist labor laws, because otherwise we would argue that Europe is doing the same thing. So go ahead and respond to the members' questions. have a chance of the GPA.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair, Chairperson, Obabu, and thank you to members of the committee for presenting suggestions how we can improve but also raising specific questions for responses. I need to appreciate upfront the context put forward by the chairperson in terms of the status of the report. And let me add to that context by saying that in our understanding, when we present this report to this August structure, the intention is to equip members of the committee with areas of weakness where we have noticed, based on our analysis, some blockages. And we have high confidence that members will take these issues forward with department. In that way, we have multiple points of oversight. We lose our position as a department. By the way, we don't have any legislative standing to instruct departments to do certain things. We use the position and proximity of our office to ensure departments do certain things, you know, as compared to treasury that has a specific legislative framework to enforce certain things in departments. So your role in that sense we see as a very complementary and desirable role in when present this record as frequent as possible to the committee. You will also note, and I'm just dealing first with general observations on the comments made. A comforting comment by specifically the two members relates to the focus on, you know, things that are going wrong in the report on the rates and all that. That is our strategic approach, and also an approach that was recommended by Cabinet in the last quarter. Also, we were presenting the NGA report of the fifth year of the NGSF. That is well and good to highlight areas of good performance, the greens, in the sense that it enables others to learn from good practice and to replicate those practices. But when we want to drive change in the manner of doing things, it's better to highlight the reds, areas where things are not going well, projects are behind schedule, this and that to use practice like this oversight committee to push more improve performance from government. So that is why our specific analysis speaks a lot on the areas where things are not going well. Not to say there are no areas where we are doing very well in other areas in health and other sectors. But we bring to the attention of decision makers the areas where things are not going as fast as desired, so as to foster interventions in that sense. Another common trend in the comments made and the questions from honorable members, especially the first two, was the constant reference to what is to be done. You
within the PME. Following analysis of this nation, we actually make suggestions, not wholly based on just the PME sector input, but based on discussions from various factions, your ministerial committees, the various implementation forums, and engagement and messages coming from the sector, that particular sector as a whole. We then put this suggestions forward to the decision makers of what decisions need to be taken, what needs to be done. The value for the committee is to raise the same questions in terms of to what extent has the department managed to do what was proposed as something that needed to be done from the DPME analysis, because this report that what was sent to you is what was said to the minister leading that department and what has been said to the leadership of those departments and the various structures. So, for instance, when we say we need to accelerate performance on Uzubufu, to what extent have departments moved on that? So it equips you, it enables you to raise strategic questions to those departments. I'm just dealing with cross-cutters right now. On the general cross-cutting issue of that speaks to the quality of the data, the unit of measurements that we're using, percentages versus numbers, the quality of data issues relating to the economic figures presented now that might be inaccurate. Let me say there are two causes, two reasons for that. The one is our reporting period on the MTSF follows the financial year 2014-2015. So when we compile this report, we were actually using data from the last quarter of the financial year. This week, we're actually presenting reports to cabinet committees based on the first quarter of the current financial year. So you find the alignment in that sense. We're like a quarter behind. The unit of analysis. When we looked at the MTSF chair from the fourth administration, going into the current MTSF, we found the current performance monitoring was like a new system introduced in government. There was difficulties in terms of matching the correct unit of analysis with what is actually happening on the ground. So we get reports that say numbers against percentages and all that. We have since developed guidelines to departments to help them merge the unit of analysis. And the current review of the MTSF seeks to address that. So where we have percentages with them. Actually, took a while. We were changing for percentages, and ministers would prefer numbers and all that. But that alignment is happening now. Yeah, to focus consistency in the units of measurement. So we're refining the current MTSF based on the lessons drawn from the first year of implementation of the MTSF 2014-2019. There was an issue that I want to address that suggests the department not being respectful to the instructions of the committee, and I want to address this chair with much humility, emphasizing our deep desire to strengthen collaboration and to augment our work through better collaboration with the Standing Committee on Appropriations. So we apologize for the late submission of the presentation. I won't speak to processes internally that resulted into that internal to our system, including extreme focus on the preparations of the reporting that I indicated this week is our reporting week to Cabinet. But that aside, I want to tender our apologies on behalf of the acting DJ and the minister. Regarding the focus, the late submission of the numbers, given that the committee actually focuses on money issues, set up our work in CPME primarily track performance on the outcomes. So we use the outcomes approach, which basically look at the performance of the system as a whole on particular actions, key indicators and targets. We then, in partnership with Treasury, use the performance information to inform the expenditure reviews that National Treasury conducts. And those, through the expenditure reviews, then we're asking questions around this was the allocation, to what extent did it enable the department to achieve the desired objective. I hope that is clear. So the value of our work actually provides evidence of whether the department has done that which they set themselves to do using the outcomes approach. But the financial part of it is guided by the expenditure reviews from National Treasury. So what will help the committee going forward to balance these two is probably to ask for presentations of the expenditure reviews per program or department type D, or to ask us to do a joint presentation zooming on few departments. The other issue I want to the honorable member asked that I specifically address is why we leave out certain departments, the two departments that were left out. Again, that's because of the use of outcomes, because certain outcomes cluster or lump together several departments. So outcome one, for instance, is only the Department of Basic Education with their entities. Outcome 9, on the other hand, no, outcome 11, on the other hand, that looks at safety and crime issues, lumps all the departments that operate with whose mandate is within that space. That's your police, justice, those departments. So our response and analysis was focusing on the outcomes, not the departments. With outcomes driven, we'll work in that way. I can use another example in an outcome that I'm very much held on outcome 7 that deals with rural development. In that department we have in that outcome we have the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform as the coordinating ministry. But we have supporting departments, Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries, the economic department, EDD, dealing with the trade issues in that environment. Overall, there are about 16 departments contributing, but we'll do the analysis based on the lead department and the key supporting departments, and that outcome Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries and the Department of Environment Affairs and Water Need.
Okay.
So that is the issue. Then I think the chairperson gave a very correct articulation and context of the economic issues, the base for comparison and all that with South Africa benchmarking herself against the trade partners, trading partners in the Eurozone, and the BRICS and China. We take a strong recommendation of the Listen by this committee to look at other African countries, focusing on from which base did they emerge, from. So we take that as a recommendation going forward. Who will implement the recommendation that we put forward? Again, this we expect the clusters, and this has happened, the various clusters to which the departments respond to ensure that the recommendations are implemented. Just to use as an example, our analysis of inadequate investment on the production sectors, for instance, which has great potential to turn around the economy with the agricultural sector, deployment through agriculture, manufacturing, and all that, has actually resulted or contributed to what today is referred to as the 9-point plan. The 9-point plan is honored to focus more investment on that sector. So this discussion, the information feeds back into the cluster system and the CAP committees for monitoring and for ensuring implementation of the recommendation. The comment on the 75% local content, why differences around that. I think most views on strategic interventions in government, there are also ideological differences. You know, with 75% local content, would we have capacity in country to respond to that and questions of that nature? So the areas of difference was actually lying on ideological perspectives and difference, but there is consensus on that. On the completion, exact completion date of the Mbubu, the Van Gogh project, I don't have specific dates with me right now, but that information could be made available through our POA report. We can source that information and submit it to the committee. The same goes to the print completion date of Makolo. Suffice to say that when we do the analysis, it's based on evidence or information that's presented at the time, so we can make that available to the community. With reference to unemployment, rural unemployment, I focused on that, what I was saying about urban unemployment. I think the general trend is that unemployment is a problem across the country, but we're highlighting rural because that's the outcome deals with the rural space. So here the analysis speaking to what is the magnitude of the problem in the rural areas. the question on the math literacy is mathematics. It's mathematics. We have confirmed that with the vector specialist, this math that informed that analysis. The effort to recover municipal debt, we understand that the MISA structure is intended in part to strengthen capacity for especially the vulnerable municipalities to improve the efficiency in their operations, which will include the municipal recovery debt. Having said that, we don't want to leave the impression that it's going to be an easy solution, because some of the, especially the rural municipalities, have really significant challenges of capacity and all that, and hence the focus within those structures to enable, to provide enablers that will help them to overcome the limitations of capacity and the weak resource base. A specific issue that speaks to our criteria, particularly the green criteria, is beyond. There are seven, about four measures that we're using there. Target has been achieved or has been exceeded. I think there's no problem with that. Has almost been achieved and target will be achieved. The operating rate is within a set time period. So if we're reporting end of the quarter and the target was end of the year and they are halfway through, so the indications are they likely to achieve that. So hence the green. Comparative peers, we dealt with that using comparisons for the to home. We think that is a recommendation of the committee. The differences of opinion in the local requirement process, the 30% to see the ideological difference in issues around capacity. Say, if we say 30% preferential requirement of goods produced by smallholder farmers. Will they have the expertise and skills to manage contracts and all? I think those there are issues around that. But agreement has been reached, so it's an issue. I felt some a level of impatience with the language used in the report. Reducing the tape, the regulations, our ticking boxes, and all that. In our view, we think the committee is appreciative of the honesty with which the government is criticizing itself. So we put forward information that says the bureaucratic systems in government are a hindrance. It's an objective assessment. So the proposals to deal with that, we don't think it's going to have negative impact on the economy and on job creation, as opposed to having those red tape systems, red tape in order. So a central point to deal with the regulations around water, around to process title deeds and all that, make it easy, especially now with the discussions around ensuring or supporting small, medium enterprises. It's not a kicking off. But also we can use this on a record basis to say to departments, what have you done to reduce the burden of red tape in the interest of small businesses in the sector. The same issue around our use of language, we need to plan more, is because we're presenting our reports to decision makers to underscore that message for proper planning and all that, so we don't allocate resources on ad hoc basis. One last specific question from me is the green paper process. How long does it take? Ideally, in terms of the admission criteria, this is the green paper on the human centeredness. Ideally, it should be around 12 to 18 months, but depending on the consultation period put forward. So this green paper is done, but the consultation process has not been started, which could be a lengthy process, consultation from the ministerial structures and the public to test the green paper. The questions on youth and related payments, the CFO will address that. Let me, if I left up some of the questions, probably it's because we take those as recommendations, things to address that need attention from the committee, and I'll ask the CFO to respond to the expenditure questions. Thank you.
I forgot to make the observation that the DPME, is a very important department of government. Very important. I get the sense though that probably because it's also one of the departments, although it's a major one. It doesn't have the whip. I get the sense that it doesn't have a whip. I don't know whether it is proper to monitor the evaluation and evaluate the performance of government departments, and some of them underperform. And you say, well, you have underperformed one tenth there. So it may be the issue of the enabling legislation, which might not be there, I don't know, but I'm sensing that kind of extra doesn't exist, and that's not good enough.
Thank you, Chair, for making that observation. Having an enabling legislation would strengthen enormously the position of the DPME in terms of enforcing it or encouraging implementation of the medium-term strategic framework. But right now, our position is, given the level of legislation, our position is really good in the sense that the delivery agreement or the performance agreement of the ministers and the heads of departments are monitored in the presidency using assessments from DPME. So when it comes to driving performance on the medium-term strategic framework and the outcome, that becomes a priority, also because it's a change agenda of government. Ministers are assessed based on that. There's also a recent cabinet decision, Chair, that requires the assessment of heads of departments and DGs to be done by DPME based on the commitments on the performance agreements, which will make a very big difference where the assessment is based on committed performance agreement by the head of department. So we don't have the situation where the AG finds a gross irregularities in the department and the head of department is receives the performance bonus. It mismatch between performance and the reality on the ground. Mm-hmm. But acceleration on the legislation would help.
I'd like to start with the 30-day payments. I think there's also a question on one of the slides, 30-day payments, and the slide refers to payments made to service providers. So there's legislation that requires that all payments must be made within 30 days. And that slide is just related to that legislation. In terms of the department's underperformance, we pay 97% of our invoices, 97% by value of our invoices within 10 days, and the remainder we pay between 11 and 30 days. We haven't paid the invoice date in quite a few years. The cause of the delays in SMS salaries, senior management salaries, we are not sure. The salaries are determined by the Department of Public Service and Administration. So I would think that it's because of the process of negotiating the salaries for levels 1 to 12, which was also negotiated with Labour. And so I would think that process took a little bit longer, and maybe that's why it also took a little bit longer for senior managers to get the increases. It was backdated 1/18. So. In the appointments of the critical posts in the department, I think we are normally very quick in filling posts. Unfortunately, the higher level posts can take a little bit longer. There are also additional processes that we have to go through when it comes to senior managers. More tests we have to do, competency assessments we have to do, and then a higher level process that needs to go to cabinet. So they do sometimes take longer. So we have all the posts that we have to advertise and fill ourselves, we have to fill it. Now, as senior at executive level, with the exception of the director general, that process is currently at the cabinet level. Then the NYDA program, that program itself is primarily there to transfer funds to the NYDA. So 99% of the money that we transfer as is to the NYDA. It's not really our money. There's a small component there that helps us to provide oversight over the NYDA, so they monitor the performance of the NYDA, and they support the deputy minister, who is the delegate to the function of oversight over the NYDA, and then they're also involved in some policy development work. Of the money that's not transferred to the NYDA, I think almost all of the rest of the budget goes to the Commonwealth Youth Program, which is an annual amount that we pay in subscription fees. There was a question on the budget. I was not quite sure I understood the question. The quarter one drawings for Program 2, our cost budget evaluation, was 20.5 million, of which 16.4 million was spent. And as I indicated before, as the underspending is primarily the evaluations, I think it's slightly longer than expected in the evaluation projects. I think that would have been all the questions. I hope I'm correct.
Maybe one side comment. Why two slides on finances and all that? Because we're small but very efficient department, our output is bigger than the MTSF. Yes, thank you.
Members, follow-up questions, if any? Not today. No. All right. No. Okay. Members, thank you very much.
Which department are we meeting tomorrow?
Yes, we are meeting two departments tomorrow: Health and Rural Development, Townhouse Hotel. I'm told you Townhouse Hotel. Yes. Okay. General matter. Okay. Once we discuss, we will do that. All right. Let me read the officials of the department.
us so that we can, should we release staff as well?
No,
we can keep up here. Okay. All right. All right. Committee. Yeah. We will deal with those three issues. But as I said, we will suspend the minutes for the next meeting. Tomorrow we start at 9:00. At 9:00.